call to order the March 16th, Thursday, March 16th, 2007, committee meeting of the Government Operations and Elections Policy Committee. We are still waiting on one or two people yet here to be able to get a quorum, but Representative Pearson, you are going to be presenting House File 271 in the absence of the bill author, Representative Zerwas, this morning. And this is going to be re-referred to General Register. Although we don't have a quorum, but we do have a busy agenda, I'm going to go ahead and ask you, Representative Pearson, to introduce yourself. And when we get we do now have a quorum. Representative Jessup is here, so. Yep. I will move House File 2171 before the committee to be re-referred to the General Register. 2177 to be re-referred to the General Register. Representative Pearson, if you will proceed with the bill, I see that there's an A1 amendment. That might be an author's amendment.
There is an A1 amendment, and actually, if you could offer the A1, I could get the bill in the order that the author would like it in.
I will offer the A1 amendment to House File 2171. Any discussion on the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author wishes? Hearing none and seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion carries. The bill is now in the order that the author would like it. Representative Pearson, to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This is really a housekeeping bill that allows advanced practice registered nurses and physician assistants to complete the necessary paperwork for the care they are providing on a daily basis. I'm actually thrilled that I'm substituting for this bill, as I have a dear friend who's a nurse practitioner who has been very, very persistent in making sure that I was co-authoring this bill, and she will be thrilled that I actually am presenting it in committee. This is not a scope of practice bill. This eliminates delays and duplication of workforce caused by the need to find physicians to sign a form for patients that they have never seen, potentially never seen. This promotes transparency and accountability by recognizing documents from APRNs and PAs, and it's not controversial. The following stakeholders of the bill have reviewed the bill and have no objections. Minnesota Medical Association, Minnesota Board of Medicine, Minnesota Board of Nursing, Department of Human Services, and the Minnesota Department of Health. There is no fiscal impact, and I do have people who can answer questions, but it's a fairly non-controversial housekeeping bill that with the amount of time that you guys have and bills on the agenda may not require a whole lot of additional testimony.
I see you do have a testifier. Are you for questions, or do you want to speak to the bill? Questions?
Yes.
Okay. Members, questions of the bill author or any other resources that may be available to assist with this? Seeing no member questions at this time, is there anyone from the public who wishes to speak on the matter before the committee? House File 2177 as amended. House File 2177 as amended. Seeing no one coming forward, no member questions. Representative Pearson, we'll give you the final word on the bill before we take action.
Just a shout out to PL. Thanks for keeping me informed of this amazing change in legislation that will hopefully make the practice run smoother.
Representative Pearson, with that, I will renew my motion that House File 2177, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. You are on your way. Yep. The next item, members, that we will take up is the minutes for from yesterday's meeting, the 15th of March. And Representative Freiberger, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Yes, I have, and I would move approval.
Representative Freiberg moves approval of the minutes from the March 15th meeting. Any questions, discussions on that? Seeing none, hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The majority of our business today, members, is going to be on House File 729, which is going to be the omnibus elections bill. And originally, I was the author on this bill, but who will be carrying this bill is Representative Fenton, and so she's making her way to the testifying table. How I want to proceed today is I would like to go through the amendments, since the DE amendment has been posted for a number of days, And then when we have the bill in its final shape after we've considered amendments, then we'll take public testimony and we'll take public input on the bill as a final product after we've gone through the amendments. And so with that, I'm going to also let you know that we are scheduled to reconvene this evening after session if we do not get our work done this morning in room 300 South, one of our favorite rooms. And that will be, again, at the end of session for the call of the chair. So depending upon how long session goes and how our work product gets done this morning will dictate as to whether or not we need to come back this evening and how quickly we can dispense with that. So Representative Fenton, what I am going to do is I'm going to move House File 729 before the committee to be re-referred to the General Register. And I'll also take up the DE1 amendment, which is going to be the main body right now of the bill. And so I will move the DE1 amendment as well to get the bill in the shape that the author wishes. Any discussion at this time to get the bill in the shape that the author wants? Seeing none and hearing none, all those in favor of the DE1 amendment to House File 729 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Representative Fenton, the bill is in the order in which you would like it at this point, and I'm just going to pause for 1 second here.
Thank you.
And with that, we'll start immediately with the amendments, and the first amendment that we have is the A1 amendment. And Representative West, this is an amendment that you had on a product that we were working on in the bill that we laid over, and because it wasn't quite ready to go yet, we didn't take it that day because it had missed the deadline for an amendment. Did you want to speak to your amendment today, the A1, Representative West?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd like to move the A1 amendment, and this amendment doesn't change the effect of what's already in the bill. It just specifies explicitly that when they use the e-signature option, when they sign in, it prints out simultaneously proof of their sign-in. But it's that was already implied in the original language. This is just making it explicit.
If I'm not mistaken, Representative West, this is a bill that you and Minority Leader Nelson co-authored, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Right. All those in favor of the A1 amendment to House File 729 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion carries. The second amendment that we will have is the A2 amendment, and actually the A2 and the A3 amendment, just to kind of set the stage a bit here, are amendments that Representative Pugh has, and they relate to two bills that we had heard earlier this week that there was no real controversy on. We did not include them in the DE amendments at the time because they had not been through the committee process, and so we had the DE up before then, so they are eligible for an amendment, and with that, I'm going to move the A2 amendment before the committee and ask Representative Pugh to present the A2 amendment. Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A2 amendment adds a second date for the second date is 28 days for the completion of data entry by the county of the election day registrations. And it also offers the Secretary of State's office discretion to allow for an accommodation for good cause should the county not be able to complete that the project by that second date. Currently in statute, there is not a second date, so for a number of reasons, this is a good bill and would be a good amendment.
And my apologies, Representative Fenton. I should be asking you as the author of the bill what your position is on these. And my apologies. I'm assuming that if you had a problem with the A1, you would have spoken up.
I would have spoken up.
And shared on it. So I am going to follow protocol and ask the author what her opinion on the A2 amendment is. Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is a friendly amendment, and I would urge your support.
Members, discussion to the A2 amendment. Seeing none and hearing none, all those in favor of the A2 amendment to House File 729 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Representative Pugh, you also have the A3 amendment, and as I had said before, these are two resulting from two bills that the committee had heard earlier. I would ask you to proceed. I will move the A3 before the committee to be considered for House File 729. Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment is going to make it easier for election judges to serve outside of their original, their home jurisdiction. And it is a, it's an opportunity for counties and precincts that may be short of election judges that are looking for additional judges to know who might be willing to travel up to however many miles, and but they're not required to actually utilize those individuals. But as a state, we have a significant lack of election judges to serve, and so this should just make things easier. Hopefully we'll have more election judges serving.
Representative Fenton to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I would, this is a friendly amendment. I spoke with the author, talked to me about this ahead of time, and I would urge your support.
Representative Fenton, we do have a member question. Representative Joaquin to the A3 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it, maybe it would be to Representative Pugh. If I vaguely remember when we talked about this, there was some concern that a certain list would have to be exhausted before they could move on. Did we tweak that language or not? They were worried that it would, maybe Chair can remember what the discussion was. My brain's a little foggy right now. They were worried that the way that language was drafted, that they'd have to get through the, is this what your bill was maybe trying to fix then, that the election judges in the current municipality had to get through their list before they could move to this extra list? Do you remember?
Representative Pugh?
Mr. Chair and Representative Joaquin, there was the amendment which clarified that this was a may, not a require. My initial bill called for a requiring. This just now presents, my understanding is that this just presents a list of election judges that are available should a county or precinct be directed to the county, then directed to the precincts, have a need. That they may draw upon the list.
Representative, you can follow up?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. That was what I was remembering. So we did have an amendment that day to fix that language. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Joaquin.
Members, other questions on the A3 amendment? Seeing none and hearing none, all those in favor of the A3 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails. The next amendment that we're going to take up is the 817-0027, again, the A17-0027, and Representative Kwan, that is your amendment, and I will ask you to brief the committee on the amendment. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and those that have been around a while know that the elective to appointive is somewhat of a contentious discussion, and keeping to the position that elected positions are basically, they're directly reportable and accountable to the people. When the position for valid reasons is made appointive, I think that we should still maintain that direct accountability to the people, and this amendment would have a retention election, which would be an up or down vote on keeping the appointed person. And I just feel personally that it's important to keep that direct accountability to the people on these positions.
To the bill author, to the A17-0227 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am going to urge a no vote on this. There are already mechanisms in the appointment language that in the bill for reverting to elected recorders that constituents can use if they dislike an appointment, an appointee. So I urge a no vote.
Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To correct the author, all of the corrective measures are to switch back to elective from appointive. This would be the only measure that has ever been submitted to allow it to maintain being appointive, but just allow the people to have a voice in whether that appointed person is maintained. So once again, presently the process says you either have elected or you have appointed. This amendment says we acknowledge you have valid reasons to go to appointive, But the people still have the power to hold that person accountable. And I think that's a base part of democracy.
Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I support Representative Fenton's. I don't think this is necessary that we currently have the ability with the offices that we've done in the past that have gone from elected to appointed. The reverse referendum is already in statute on those to do that. This is adding cost to the local governments and the counties that would choose to do this. Plus, while that long time ago in our contract I worked under, it said from time to time they may choose to appoint foremen from the crew. And it was also pointed out that a gentleman that was a foreman that was very problematic the job was taken away from him, and it was pointed out that from time to time they can also disappoint a foreman. When we allow the county boards to appoint a person in this position, they also have the ability, if that person's not working out, they can take that job away from and then appoint somebody else when we convert these to that. They're not guaranteed the job for life, so they can disappoint them right now. I don't think we need to do this. If there's a problem with the person that's there, I think the county board and the people that are on the county board will hear that from their residents, and they have the ability to take that person out of the job and appoint somebody different. So I don't think this is necessary, and I would urge a no vote also.
Other member discussion on the A17-0227 amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor of the A17-0277 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No. The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. The next amendment that we have before us is the A17-0229 amendment. Again, A17-0229. And Representative Quam, this is yours as well. And to the author of the amendment, Representative Quam, to present the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a part of my effort to make Minnesota HAVA compliant. And presently, Minnesota is one of three states that have an exemption. And having an exemption does not mean you're compliant. An exemption is for provisional ballots. The U.S. Supreme Court Justice Stevens, in the majority opinion of Crawford versus Marion County Election Board, stated the availability of the right to cast a provisional ballot provides an adequate remedy. Furthermore, he stated, as the Carter Baker Report observed, the electoral system cannot inspire public confidence if no safeguards exist to deter or detect fraud. And he further has stated in the majority opinion, it remains true that flagrant examples of fraud have been documented throughout this nation's history by respected historians and journalists. Further statement, demonstrate that not only is the risk of voter fraud real, but it could affect the outcome of a close election. And another statement in the majority opinion, the electoral system cannot inspire public confidence if no safeguards exist to deter or detect fraud. Justice Stevens, in the majority opinion, observes that the U.S. Supreme Court acknowledges there is fraud, acknowledges that provisional ballots are good and adequate, and acknowledges that for confidence in our system, we should have the opportunity to detect and deter fraud. And so I have this amendment because I agree with the Supreme Court majority opinion, and I also believe that Minnesota should be more fully HAVA compliant.
To the bill author on amendment A17-0229.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and I appreciate the intent. However, currently this bill has a zero fiscal note. And I'm going to urge a no vote because this would add substantial costs to the state and local governments at this time.
Other member discussion to the A17-00229. Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also, this would add additional costs to our counties and to our municipalities and their voting and their elections. Plus, it has the, because a lot of, most people would not come back and do with all the things that are needed to be done to prove afterwards in the election. This, in effect, disenfranchises a large number of voters. And for that reason and the cost mechanism, I think we should urge a no vote. And, Mr. Chair, I'd ask for a roll call on this amendment.
A roll call being requested. Is there other member discussion on the A17-0229? Representative Kwame, then Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Kwame. Chair. And disenfranchisement, the U.S. Supreme Court, in its majority opinion, supports provisional balloting. So I don't think the U.S. Supreme Court supports disenfranchisement. And this is the law of the land for over 95% of the people that live in the United States live where there's provisional ballots. So if we're thinking that California, Massachusetts, Washington, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, have institutionalized disenfranchisement, I think we might be mistaken to use that as an argument not to be HAVA compliant. And the federal government actually gave us money to be HAVA compliant, and we had the Secretary of State talk to us about that we need more money for the electoral system. So I think I understand the objection to a cost, but I think HAVA compliance and ensuring that there is increased deterrence and detection of fraud is a valid expense for the state of Minnesota.
Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to speak in support of the author, Representative Fenton, and objecting to this bill. There are provisional ballots in other states, but to the contrary of what Representative Kwame is saying, those were put into place because those states don't have same-day registration. And it's to make sure that everybody has a right to access a ballot and the right to vote. That's part of the Helps America Vote Act. Here, we do have same-day registration. So provisional balloting might not be the best way to get at what Representative Kwame is trying to address, and there may be other ways. So I just wanted to support Representative Fenton.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I didn't realize that Minnesota had less than 5% of the population of the United States when you're saying 95% of the people, the states, and there's two other states that are like us that don't have provisional balloting. I think we make up more than 5%. I mean, that's a little bit of hyperbole that we heard this earlier when this similar bill was brought up to us that person's at 97%. I think the last time was 97% of the population of the United States votes with provisional balloting. I think that Minnesota and two other states combined is a lot more than 5% of the U.S. population. So, Mr. Chair, as Representative Joachim said, the reason why we were allowed to not have it is because we have same-day registration. The reason for the provisional balloting was so that people could, if there was a mistake made at the polling place, that they had pre-registered and they were eligible to vote, that they could prove that, and it gave them the time to do that. Because we have same-day registration, if somebody shows up at the ballot or at the polling place and their name's not on the list, they can register on the spot and cast a vote. So I think this is totally unnecessary, and I would urge a no vote.
Other member questions at this time? Seeing none, a roll call vote requested. The clerk will call the roll.
O'Driscoll?
No.
Pugh?
Yes.
Bliss?
No.
Fenton?
No.
Freiberg?
No.
Halverson?
No.
Jessup? Lee?
No.
Mason?
No.
Nash?
No.
Nelson?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Kwame?
Yes.
Sandsted?
No.
Swidzinski?
No.
Heiss?
No.
West?
No.
You, Joaquim?
To the A17-0229, there being two ayes and 15 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. To the A4 amendment, Representative Freiberg, is that your amendment, sir?
Yes, it is.
Representative Freiberg, I will move the A4 amendment before the committee for consideration to the to House File 729. To the amendment, Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment is based on a bill I have that has bipartisan support. I requested a hearing on it, did not receive one. It just says that if an individual is 17 at the time of a primary election, but will turn 18 before the general election, then they can vote in that primary election. I actually fell into this category myself because I have a late September birthday, and there was a candidate in the primary that I was a big fan of, but was not able to cast my vote because I did not turn 18 until after the primary. So hope it would be considered a friendly amendment, and I would urge members to support it.
To the bill author on the A4 amendment, Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and Representative Freiberg. I understand. I mean, I see you have good intentions here. Is that we're a caucus state. I know that if you're going to be 18 by the time you're old enough to vote, that you can actually participate in caucus. There are some concerns I have with this language. If there's something else on the ballot, then how do we handle that? There could be a large cost to local governments because they may need to print separate ballots so the 17-year-olds would only be able to vote in primary election or presidential nomination primary, as well as I believe this may be unconstitutional. Our Minnesota Constitution in the manner of brevity, I'm not going to read you the whole statement, but it is Article 7, Section 1, talks about the eligibility of a person needing to be 18 years old. Of age when they do vote in a vote period. So I think there's some concerns, and for that reason, I would urge no vote.
Representative Fenton, I just have a clarifying question on that. You had said that if there's something else on the ballot, so if I understand that right, you're saying that there could be primary election issues, which Representative Freiberg is talking about, but there could be issues that someone could be like a school referendum
there
or
could be a school
local
referendum.
Other election that's on there that's not in a primary but being held on the same day for efficiencies and voter convenience.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's exactly what I meant. So then how do you know they would, according to this amendment, they would only be allowed to vote on the presidential primary. So would we have to have separate ballots? And then how do we make sure that their privacy is protected with how they voted?
Representative Fenton, I think you bring up a good point. You talk about privacy. We just had some hearings about with the disabled community, and they had concerns about the special kind of equipment that they may be using and the differentiation with ballots. Just once again, if we had are you 18 or are you not, and two separate receptacles, if you will, that are receiving these ballots, and depending upon the number of 17-year-olds that vote, that could also be an issue where we'd have a problem with people knowing how an individual may or may not have voted. So, other member discussion. Representative Freiberg.
Just a couple of points. First, Representative Fenton said that, you know, we're a caucus state. Obviously, that's one thing we just changed. We now have a presidential primary in our state. She mentioned the concern about separate ballots being prepared and the potential privacy implications there, or, you know, potential cost there. I know you have an amendment coming up later, like we both have amendments addressing the same issue dealing with vacancies and nomination. I noticed the route you go, we take slightly different approaches to addressing that issue, but the route you go is to have separate ballot prepared there too. So, you know, I guess I don't see that as a huge imposition on candidates. I think this is on local governments. I think this is a good amendment. Just wanted to mention that.
Other discussion to the A4 amendment. Seeing none and hearing none, all those in favor of the A4 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. The motion does not prevail. The A4 is not adopted. To the A5 amendment, Representative Nelson. I will move the A5 amendment before the committee.
I'm just trying to help. Yeah.
Yep.
I'll move the A5 amendment. And Mr. Chair, the A5 amendment is house the same as language is in House File 246. The carried by my brain just Representative Schultz. Yes, I'm seeing her first name, but I could her last name just didn't pop out of my head. Anyway, and what that does is it sets up a redistricting commission. Similar to, you know, every 10 years we have to redistrict because of population shifts, and at times that can be very contentious and very political, and either side gets accused of gerrymandering. And what this commission does is sets up a commission of former judges to look at that and draw the lines and hopefully draw the lines more fairly in people's minds, so the perception of political gain is not there for one person or another, and then moves those forward, and then those are the ones that we move forward and vote on in the legislature. And so, Mr. Chair, that's what the amendment does. I know there's differences of opinion on who should be doing that, but states that have done this, it has taken some of the partisanship out of the drawing the redistricting lines. I know the last time we redistricted, something that a lot of people may not know, but in the 03 year after the 02 redistricting, this committee has to draw the lines for the Met Council and do the same thing redistricting. And sometimes that can get contentious. And I know there was one that we drew, the line was drawn, these maps were came out, and they were based on population, and then it looked like it was gerrymandering. There was one little, in one of the districts, one little squiggle where a little piece was put in with another district, and that was done because that was kept one city whole. And I think Representative Albright came to me and wondered why that was drawn that way, because it was in his legislative district, but that kept that city whole all in one that council district, and that's part of what we do when they do the redistricting. So, Mr. Chair, that's the amendment, and I would like a roll call on that if we could.
Sure. To the bill author, Representative Fenton, to the A5 amendment.
Thank you, members, and Mr. Chair, and Representative Nelson. I'm going to urge a no vote because there was a Senate companion and a fiscal note came back with significant costs to the state of $215,000. And I'm going to urge a no vote.
Members, additional discussion to the A5 amendment. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. This, I have had a number of communications where people support this particular bill, so I will be voting yes and would encourage others to do so.
Further discussion on the A5 amendment? Seeing none and hearing none, a roll call being requested. The clerk will take a roll.
O'Driscoll?
No.
Pugh?
No.
Bliss?
No.
Fenton?
No.
Freiberg?
Yes.
Halverson?
Yes.
Jessup?
No.
Lee?
Yes.
Mason?
Yes.
Nash?
Nope.
Nelson?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Quam?
No.
Samstead?
Yes.
Tice?
No.
West?
No.
Yul Wakim?
Yes.
There being 7 ayes and 10 nays, the amendment is not adopted. The motion does not prevail. To the next amendment, the A6 amendment, Representative Halverson. And again, I'm so used to moving amendments from efficiency and because you don't have members. Each and every one of you have that privilege, and I just need to let you do that. So, Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it is a privilege serving on this committee, no matter who moves the amendments. So, and this is an issue that many people on the committee are somewhat familiar with, and is incredibly important to me and incredibly important to the people of Minnesota, which is why I bring it forward. There are districts in our state that are bombarded with outside dark money to the tune of likely millions of dollars. However, we don't get the privilege of knowing how much dark money is being spent because of a little quirk in state law called the magic words, or what's often referred to as the magic words threshold, that you have to say vote for or vote for against a candidate or vote for or vote against an issue in order for it to be considered electioneering communication. However, if you ask just about anybody and there's a photograph of a candidate with a call so-and-so and tell them you dislike them. I'll use polite words. My joke is always called Cruella DeVille and tell her to quit killing puppies. That is within close proximity to election, 30 to 60 days, depending on the election. That's election communication. That's about the candidate. That's about the election. And they're disguised as issue ads, but they're not issue ads. If they were issue ads, they would take place and we would see them all over the state. But we typically see them in about 20 districts. My district historically has been one of those. And there are a few folks in this room who have probably seen that. And the effect of that, and the reason that this is so vitally important to the people of Minnesota, is that it serves to frustrate, confuse voters. It serves to remove the conversation about elections and candidates and issues that are important to the community outside the community to organizations that disguise themselves with names like Americans Who Love America the Most or whatever it is. So you really can't find out who they are, and you can't find out who funds them. And very often there's all kinds of little shady schemes in order to fund these organizations. And the public wants to know. At the very least, the public wants to know who's funding our elections. There is a growing distrust in our electoral system because of this kind of spending. And since the Supreme Court has made it possible for entities to spend as much money as they want to on elections, the only recourse that states really have is transparency in order to make sure that voters have the information that they need about who is funding campaign expenses. And so that is why I bring this forward. It is about transparency. It's about the integrity of the elections. And I think it's really important to note that the Supreme Court, when deciding Citizens United, no matter how some of us feel about the Citizens United decision, one thing that they upheld was that providing for transparency of this dark money is absolutely constitutional. And so this is something that about 30 other states have done, and it's time for Minnesota to do it. And I'd love to stop having the annual conversation about this. And so would encourage a yes vote. Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call on this amendment.
Roll call being requested to the bill author on the A6 amendment. Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And Representative Halverson's amendment is related to campaign finance. And this bill before us is policy only. So I ask that you vote no on this amendment.
Member discussion. Representative Halverson.
Mr. Chair, while this on the floor might rise to a germaneness article, with this omnibus elections bill in committee, this is absolutely something that the committee can add to the bill without fear of any kind of germaneness article argument in committee. It's something that is within the power of the committee to do while we mark up our bill, so I'd encourage people to vote yes.
Yeah, Representative Halverson, you are correct. In committee, we have the ability to work with. That's what committees are there for. But traditionally, since I've been on here, my understanding is before that, we've oftentimes had two separate bills, one that deals with 10A campaign finance board related issues, and then one that deals with election issues, and we've never really crisscrossed those. And that would do that in this particular bill, and we've kind of changed the way that this committee has done business in the past. And so that's my clarification on that. Other discussion by members on the A6 amendment? Seeing none, hearing none, the vote is requested. The clerk will take the roll.
O'Driscoll?
No.
Pugh?
No.
Bliss?
No.
Fenton?
No.
Freiberg?
Yes.
Halverson?
Yes.
Jessup? Lee?
Yes.
Mason?
Yes.
Nash?
Nope.
Nelson?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Quam?
No.
Samstead?
Yes.
Tice?
No.
West?
No.
Youakim?
Yes.
There are 7 ayes and 10 nays. The amendment, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. To the A7 amendment, Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. It would allocate Minnesota's electoral votes to the winner of the National Popular Vote, but only after enough states have passed identical laws to account for a majority of the Electoral College. We've discussed this amendment before, so in the interest of time, I'll just leave it at that, but I'm happy to go into further detail if any member would like me to.
To the bill author on the A7 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'm going to urge a no vote. This would expand the scope of the bill, but I am not inclined to support national popular vote at this time.
Member discussion on the A7 amendment. Seeing none and hearing none, all those in favor of the A7 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No. The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. To the A8 amendment, and we'll stay with Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This issue was raised recently with the special election in Chisago County. I know this was a change in law that members of both sides worked for a long time to change to try to address issues raised when late developing vacancies happened in the election campaign season previously. Certainly appreciate all the work that members put into that change, but I had some concerns with the way it happened on a few different levels. First of all, we heard from, at one point on a different bill, we heard from the Chisago County Administrator about the cost they had to put on a special election. Secondly, and perhaps more importantly, it's one thing if you're talking about where a candidate dies or comes down with a catastrophic illness, but where the candidate has in essence made a mistake, didn't actually live in the district as the example that came up in that case. I felt like it almost benefits the party whose candidate made a mistake to get sort of a totally clean break and get a chance to put on a special election, in the process leaving that district without representation in the legislature for over 2 months. The way that this amendment goes about addressing the issue, and I know there's another amendment coming up later, it says that, and I've introduced a bill to this effect, it has not received a hearing, but it says that if a candidate is, so it doesn't make any changes if a candidate dies or comes down with a catastrophic illness, but it says that the election will just go forward, votes for the ineligible candidate will not be counted. There would still be an opportunity for that party whose candidate made the mistake to put somebody forward through a write-in campaign if this were to become law. I just think it makes it fairer. And one other thing worth mentioning, and I know we've discussed this, is there is a possibility of mischief with the existing law in place. If it's possible that a candidate who lives in one district could file in a different district, knowing they don't live there, but ultimately get taken off the ballot, and then leaving that seat without any representation for more than a month. So, and it could happen in more than one district. So you could, I mean, it could happen in every district, really. You could end up with no legislature in place come the beginning of January when we're all supposed to get sworn in. Some might argue that's a good thing, but I happen not to be one of those people. So I think it's a problem that needs to be addressed. I'm assuming, based on the fact that Representative Fenton has an amendment dealing with the same issue, she feels it's a problem that needs to be addressed as well. You know, it would have been nice, it would have been good to have an opportunity for to speak about this outside of the amendment process, but and through a bill hearing, but it is what it is, and I would encourage members to support the amendment.
To the bill author and the A8 amendment, Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and, you know, Representative Freiberg, you approached me and asked me to sign on to this bill, and I wanted to think about it, and there were a couple questions I asked myself. Are we disenfranchising voters, all of those voters who voted for the candidate and who then became ineligible? And I think the answer to that question is yes, we are. And when I look at some of these election laws, I want to try to make sure we include as many voters as possible. And I think that your amendment will be disenfranchising some. And the other question that I ask is, should we be punishing voters for the misdeeds of a candidate, of an ineligible candidate? I don't think we should be punishing the voters. And so for that reason, I urge a no vote.
Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I urge a yes vote on this amendment. It could be argued and that it's not the person that disenfranchised those voters that were supporting them was the person who put their name on the ballot knowing that they didn't live in the district that they registered for. Going forward, you know, this we've had situations in this state with going back to the year that I was first elected, the plane crash, where Wellstone's plane went down. And they were left scrambling at that time, and there were changes made at that time to try and solve that problem and solve that situation. And we had the situation this time where somebody registered, and that was brought up actually before this last election, and was finally proven that person did not live in their district by the courts. So, like I said, there could be malfeasance in this, where people come forward and say, I live, and it could be from either side, come forward and say, I live in a district just to cause mischief in the election. And so I think this is a good solution to that. So I urge a yes vote on the A8 amendment.
Representative Howerson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would also urge a yes vote. I think that the voters were harmed when they didn't have a representative for several months because their representative was not honest about his residency. And I think that making sure that we do everything that we can do as a legislature to tweak what I think was an important conversation, an important solution, to make sure that we do everything in our power to make sure that members, that Minnesotans don't have to go through situations where they have to sit without representation during a legislative session. We actually had a governor many years ago, Elmer Anderson, who was involved in a recount of his election. He lost a gubernatorial election by 91 votes, and he had every right to have a recount in that election. And he chose not to because he didn't want the people of Minnesota to go without representation, to go without a governor. That is a pretty noble person who really respect the electorate. And so I think that it behooves us to take a strong look at this and vote yes so that the people of Chisago County or wherever else this happens aren't at risk of not being represented.
Other member discussion to the A8 amendment. I'll just share, having had some experience on here, we are constantly having to look at this issue. A few years ago, Representative Halverson, you've been on the committee before, Representative Nelson, myself, and others, and we started with this. We thought that we had a fix, then we had a problem in 14, then we had the problem, so we're continually working on this. And I fear sometimes that if we don't look at it from a far enough back perspective on this and a bigger landscape, that we end up creating some other potential problems. Are we going to have the permanent fix? No. But we also don't want to create some additional problems that we can see. starting on that. So I think everybody acknowledges that this is something we need to look at, but the bill author has given her thoughts on the matter. Other member discussion? Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Having come in a special election, you know, my district was not represented for a couple months because Representative Gottwald had resigned. And I think what was probably surprising is how many people don't pay attention. People just don't pay attention. And when I came down here, they didn't realize that the election had happened. So we can say that people are really, you know, really want to be represented, but half of them don't even know it. And if you ask most folks, they just don't know. They don't pay attention. I got more than once at the door. I thought we did this already. Why are we doing this again? You know, I thought we were done with this. So there is the person, you know, you look at what the voters are really thinking and they don't know. But I would also say I think we lose something if we just throw somebody in just to have them there. People deserve the best representation they can get. Yeah. From everybody. And I think if we give them the time to do that and take the risk of maybe not having them represented for a couple months, I think that's the best deal that we can give them. We need to have people who really want to be here, not just plug a position. So, you know, I wouldn't be able to support it, having come in on a special. You need quality people here. We need quality people here, people who want to be here. And if you just put somebody in just to have them there or do whatever, I think you lose that. And I think people are going to be upset that, you know, they didn't have the representation they deserved.
Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little confused. This bill respects the people that have been running all along, not ones that are just plugged in at the last minute. Representative Fenton's bill plugs somebody in at the last minute. So I think there's a little confusion here. Not that, as Chair O'Driscoll said, this is an issue that's been around the block and is going to continue probably to be around the block. We're never going to find a perfect fix. And both approaches, Representative Fenton's and Representative Freiberg's, probably should have been hashed out with bill hearings instead of through the amendment process. But I just wanted to kind of clarify what I was trying to understand of what this bill does. Thank you.
Representative Joachim, the good news is we're back here next year to get a shot at it again. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to follow up on Representative Tice's comment, I have evidence that people are paying attention. I actually posted earlier this year a screenshot of the voting board, and I heard from somebody in Chisago County that said, hey, my representative isn't up there. And so they were it was very clear that they were not happy that they were not represented with a vote on the board. So.
Other member questions on the A8 amendment. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. I totally agree with the bill, and it still amazes me that if somebody is running for this office, that they wouldn't make sure that they were in the district. I mean, to me, that's a sign of just total irresponsibility, and probably for a number of different reasons, because a number of people had to have known that. So I think I will be voting for the bill. Thank you.
Seeing no other member questions at this time, all those in favor of the A8 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No. The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. We are now to the A9 amendment. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have to apologize that I didn't talk to Representative Fenton ahead of time. We had property taxes really late, and I know we've kind of been down this road before with these amendments. This is the motor voter amendment that Representative Schultz has a bill on that allows automatic registration when you register for your driver's license. And there's a box on the driver's license that you can opt out of that automatic registration, and that the registration wouldn't be certified until the Secretary of State's and DVS office systems verify that it's accurate. So we've already talked about it before, so I'll just leave it at that.
Member discussion. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Fenton.
Thank you. So I'm just going to urge a no vote. We did go through this related to House File 1393, and you can register, to vote by opting in currently, and I'm not sure if there's a potential cost to the Department of Public Safety, so I urge a no vote.
Other member discussion at this time? Seeing none and hearing none, all those in favor of the A9 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. To the A10 amendment, Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the A10 amendment. And, Mr. Chair, I know we have in the provision here that extends the in-person absentee period. I know Representative Fenton and I co-authored that bill to extend the early in-person absentee ballot. But this is more of an early voting. It was, we found out from the after this election and the county people and the people that are in charge of elections, they like the idea that people can come in that last week before the election and actually put it in the counter and not have to go through all the putting it in an envelope and then having the envelope put it in a box and then they pick the box up and then that last week they fill it in. This actually lets the people come in early, do the similar to the in-person absentee balloting, and actually vote and put their on. They're in the counter and the ballot is counted, and that way the voter knows that their ballot is in the counter and has been counted. So, Mr. Chair, that's what my amendment does, because they won't have to have the envelopes, they won't have the other things. This actually would save money, so it would cost the counties less and cost the state less to deal with elections, and doesn't have to do the saves the rigmarole of having to go through the whole envelope process and everything else. So, Mr. Chair, this is what that amendment does, and I would ask for a roll call on this amendment.
Roll call being requested. To the bill author, Representative Fenton, to the A10 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and Representative Nelson. So he's absolutely right. My DE amendment already allows for expanded in-person absentee voting, which is counties can opt into if they choose. This amendment is a mandate to counties to allow early voting. And if I look at it, early voting for 15 days. My in-person absentee allows them to have that choice for 46 days. In 2015, there was a fiscal note to a local fiscal impact. I think the absentee voting provision allows counties to choose to spend money rather than mandating it. So I urge a no vote.
Member discussion. I'm kind of looking through the bill here, the DE amendment, and I can't find the section right as I'm quickly glancing through it. But as I recall, we struck the 7 days with the bill that was before the committee. And as Representative Fenn said, it puts it out to 46 days where someone could go in advance and actually feed in the ballot.
Yeah. It's Article Section 1, five. Section 5,
okay.
Chair.
And to that point, when you go to feed it into the ballot, there would never be an envelope. There would never be any of those kinds of things that they would have to have for 46 days versus having to put them in the envelope for the 15 days. Am I reading that right, that there would be the potential that first we'd be taking away less opportunity for people if we adopted this amendment? Representative Nelson?
The difference being is that under the Fenton language, they still have to go in and fill out the application form for an absentee ballot to get it and then put it in. This, they could just go in, sign the roster, and not have to fill out a form because they're already on the voting rolls. Or they could register to vote at that time and get on the voting rolls and vote in person.
So
that's a big difference.
Representative Nelson, just so that I understand then, if you are an individual who goes to a place where you sign that, you're only wanting to allow them to have 15 days on that. Otherwise, the other, doing the quick math, 31 days, they would have to go and sign anyhow. But they could put the ballot in the box, or in the tabulator. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Other member discussion? Seeing none and hearing none, all those in favor of... Oh, roll call. Okay, yeah. I'm glad we have that one. Thank you. On the 8, clerk will take the roll.
O'Driscoll?
No.
Pugh?
No.
Bliss?
No.
Fenton?
No.
Freiberg?
Yes.
Halverson?
Yes.
Jessup?
No.
Lee?
Yes.
Mason?
Yes.
Nash?
No.
Nelson?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Quam?
No.
Sandsted?
Yes.
Heist?
No.
West?
No.
Youakim?
There being 6 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. To our next amendment, which is the A11 amendment, Representative Nelson once again.
A11. Mr. Chair, in the bill, we have the delete all amendment. We have the allowing the county recorders to be appointed statewide. And this is a discussion we have every year with all the individual counties coming for the treasurer auditors and the recorders. What this bill does, what this amendment does, is allows all the counties the ability to choose and make the decision to go to an appointed county auditor, county treasurer, and county recorder. So it includes all of them, as opposed to just being the county recorders. And we've had this discussion before. I think this year we're up to like 45. If all the ones that have asked to do it have go through, we're up to like 45 of them out of 87 counties that we allow them to do that. And my argument here is, at what point do we just say let them all do it? They don't. Some of them have the authority to do it, haven't done it, but this will allow them to make that choice at the time that they need to make that decision, where someone's stepping down and they don't have someone qualified to do the job, to be able to combine those offices or appoint somebody to those positions. And so, Mr. Chair, that's what the A11 amendment does. And like I said, I know in the delete all amendment we have the county recorders, but this also allows the county treasurers and the county auditor position to be appointed if the county so choose.
To the bill author, Representative Fenton, to the A11 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and Representative Nelson. I appreciate your intent here, and you're right. We do have the legislation related to the county recorders. I think that this needs a more thorough investigation related to all of the other the offices that would be appointed. Because currently there are 35 counties that already appoint recorders, and so that's almost, not quite there, half of Minnesota counties. There are 4 more requests that are in this year, but and that's significantly more than we've had for, say, the auditor or treasurers. 12 counties right now as of December, and so I'm just going to urge a no vote on this amendment.
Member discussion. Representative Nelson.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's my understanding it's more than 12 counties that have the authority to do that. They may not be all have done that. It's, like I said, we're up in the same range as the recorders, as the auditor. And I would like to know, is there anybody here from the counties that think they're in favor of doing this? Is there anybody here from the counties that can come down and speak? I believe it's part of their legislative proposal to do that.
We had said that we were going to take the bill. I guess I would ask them for clarification, since the committee has a numbers question, because we haven't taken other testimony. If they can help us with a clarification question, since the committee has that question, I think that's fair. Others might have wanted to speak on other things, but we said we were going to do the amendments and then we're going to take the bill as amended. So I'd like to keep consistent with people on that. Representative Nelson, do you want the clarification on the numbers? Is that?
I would look to, do you have the numbers of the people? Or
Mr. Hagert, specifically to the clarification of the information and fairness to all. Mr. Hagert, if you'd state your name and who you represent and answer the question as to the numbers.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, the last House research I report showed that we had 44 offices, and that includes recorders, auditors, treasurers, auditor treasurers, as appointed offices, so just over halfway mark. I do not have the specific breakdown of recorders versus auditors, but I do think Representative Fenton is correct in that it does lean more heavily towards the recorder position.
Thank you, Mr. Hager. That does provide. We don't have numbers, but it does kind of at least give us the direction of what
Thank
we're looking
Chair.
At. Members, other questions on the A11? Representative Jessup.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to voice my support for the author of the bill on this. When we think about appointment of county auditors and county treasurers, we're dealing with individuals that handle money. And I get very, very concerned that when we're dealing about fiscal matters, that those particular positions should be by vote rather than by appointment. I get real concerned when we're dealing with the constituents' money in a particular county. I think that's the line that needs to be drawn here.
Thank you. Other member discussion, Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Jessup's point, our two largest counties, which handle the most amount of money, both have those positions as the auditor and the treasurer as appointed positions. Plus, the recorders handle a lot of money too, a lot of fees that come in for recording deeds and stuff like that. So they're comparable positions. And so, like I said again, at what point we keep getting these every year, one at a time, and Representative or Chair O'Driscoll knows that, and it's like deja vu. We have that every year. We have deja vu all over again when they come in, and we usually have a day when 2, 3, 4, 5 of them happen. And it's like I said, it's a matter of at what point do we just say, okay, let everyone do it. There's a procedure set up how they have to go through it. There's a procedure here where if they decide, as has been talked about earlier, to allow them to revert back to an elected position, and there's a reverse referendum if they make the decision and the voters say we want to change it back. They have the ability to do that. So, Mr. Chair, like I said, at what point do we just say, we've heard enough of these, let everybody have the opportunity to make that choice, county by county, and hand it back to the local control.
Seeing no other member questions, all those in favor of the A11 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No. The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Nelson, let's just keep with you here and go to the A12 amendment.
Mr. Chair, and we had a long discussion on this. I'll move the A12 amendment. And the A12 amendment, it deletes, on page 19, deletes Article 3, which is the June primary. And it would leave the primary where it's at. Mr. Chair, I'd also like a roll call on this, but Mr. Chair and members, I'm not in favor of the June primary. I have never been in favor of the June primary. In fact, I had some trepidation about moving it up to August when we moved it, partially because it's in the summertime when people aren't here, and that's one of the arguments that they're saying for moving it to June. But where it falls in June, there's people are still going to be on vacation. School's going to be out. Colleges are going to be closed. So it's the same argument that moving it there is to having it in August. Moving it up as early as we're talking about moving it, we're making it very difficult for both parties and for individuals that after the caucuses to get their all the things they need to do to get their delegates elected for their state conventions, to have them before the primary so that then they can have candidates run forward. And it compresses that time to such a point where it makes it almost impossible for the volunteers that we have in both of our parties' mechanisms that for them to get the stuff done that they need to get done before a June primary. So for that reason and multiples of others, I urge a yes vote on the A12 amendment.
To the bill author, Representative Fenton, to the A12.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. And I'm in support of June primary. Voters deserve to have more time listening to the candidates who are actually going to be on the ballot rather than inter-party squabble. So I urge a no vote on the amendment.
Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a concern about a June primary for the fact I think it makes it extremely difficult to have representation then from Greater Minnesota. If we are wrapping up session down here as elected officials on either side, it makes it very difficult for us to get back home and do the work within our own districts by June. I think what's going to happen, and it's probably an unintended consequence of, you know, something like this, we're going to become a legislature that represents metro-centered areas.
Other discussion to the A-12 amendment? Seeing none, roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll.
O'Driscoll?
No.
Pugh?
No.
Bliss?
No.
Fenton?
No.
Freiberg?
Yes.
Halverson?
Yes.
Jessup?
No.
Lee?
Yes.
Mason?
Yes.
Nash?
Nope.
Nelson?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Sandsted?
Yes.
Tice?
No.
West?
No.
Joaquim?
Yes.
There being seven ayes and nine nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. We will now revert to the A-15 amendment. Representative Joaquim.
Oh.
Representative Joaquim to your A-15 amendment.
Mr.
We'll come
Chair.
Back to that.
Mr. Chair, when are we going to do this?
We'll come back to it.
I think people like it. So, thank you.
Members, please. Representative Joaquim to the A-15 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A-15 amendment. And, you know, I know we didn't do the motor voter, but this is a bill that we had before us that was actually brought up 2 years ago when we were discussing this, and Representative Erdahl had it and had a great job compromising to 17. But I thought I'd throw it out there because we all know that our students are being taught civics in high school and getting really actively engaged and excited about the process. We saw it even more so during this year with presidential elections, and I want to make sure that we're capturing that enthusiasm and allowing 16-year-olds to pre-register. I know this probably won't be included, but it sure would be nice to have it be there in the conference committee so we could have that discussion and even move to the 17-year-old like we compromised last year. But we can't even talk about that unless we get it in the conference committee. So I would request a yes vote, but would defer to Representative Fenton.
One second. Mr. Gehring, is there any clarifications that are needed on this? Okay, I saw you conversing with folks. So to the bill author, Representative Fenton on the A-15 amendment.
Mr. Chair, as I'm reading this bill, it says 16 years of age. So,
And that's what Representative Joaquim mm-hmm. said, it was 16.
Okay, 16.
That was the question
okay.
as to
okay.
whether or not, we had some confusion whether it was age 17 or 16, okay. that's why I referred yeah. to Mr. Gehring on that. So,
but regardless, we had a conversation about when Representative Erdahl carried this, there was compromise language. It's I don't see that on here. I urge a no vote.
Member discussion on the A-15 amendment. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would like to speak in favor of voting of this bill. Yesterday, we had a lot of students from the Burnsville High School here. And these kids have done so much research on bills. They know so much. And again, it's a matter of starting good habits and keeping people interested. And last year when we visited with their senior class, I was just really amazed. We asked how many kids would be 18 by the election had registered, and they all had. So, I mean, I think when they're in school, we really have a good opportunity to make a good impression and get them started on good civic engagement.
Other member discussion to the A-15 amendment. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the author, I certainly understand that the bill had some change, or the bill that Representative Erdahl carried had some changes to it, and I think that if it was part of a discussion in conference committee, I think that you could make a really great case to change it to 18, and I do think it would be a really important discussion for us to carry forward for the young folks of the state of Minnesota. Our voting rates for young people in Minnesota are so drastically low, and these are the folks that are going to build our state as the rest of us retire and move on. and we really want them to be engaged in the system, and this is a great way to do it. So, and I appreciate that it's been a bipartisan discussion in the past and would encourage reconsideration, but I think we should vote yes.
Representative Halverson, I just want to clarify one thing that I may have misheard or you might have misspoken. You said you wanted to move it to 18. I think you said you wanted to move it to 16. Am I correct on that? Because that's completely out of the scope of where the amendment's at.
Mr. Chair, you are probably right. We have a phrase in my house that we call the tired sillies, and I think that second deadline week, I think I've officially hit it. So thank you for watching out for me.
Representative Joachim.
Just maybe a comment and maybe a question to the author. If we did an oral amendment and change this to 17, would you be willing to accept this and bring it forward?
Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Joachim. Again, the compromise language, I think, would prefer to be included, which would be a little bit more than a technical change, so I urge a no vote.
Then the answer is you don't want to change that.
No.
Okay. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just going to throw it out here because I don't know. Is there any type of program that we do for kids that are like 15, 16, 17? Like they do their own voting, unofficial voting? What program is that, and is there a way that we can maybe do something a little bit more? Because I think it would even be interesting for us to know what they're thinking.
There are different varying programs in the state of Minnesota that school districts and other organizations, League of Women Voters and others, do student engagement, but there isn't anything in statute that says schools or others would have to or are required to. Other discussion on the A15 amendment? Seeing none and hearing none, all those in favor of the A15 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? No.
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. The A16 amendment will not be being offered today, which brings us down to what appeared to be a kind of a popular A13 amendment here. So I will revert to the amendment's author, Representative Nelson, to present the amendment. Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the A13 amendment. And what it is, and yeah, this is a little bit tongue-in-cheek. And, Mr. Chair, this is whereas the legislature finds that whereas Representative Tim O'Driscoll worked tirelessly to create an omnibus elections bill that has the potential to dramatically improve election administration in the state of Minnesota, continuously placed the interest of voters of the state ahead of his own interests, and will likely give exceptional wisdom and good judgment, recognize the merits of amendments offered by the minority, although none of them went on. Where a few stakeholders would be surprised if Representative O'Driscoll were to accept at least half of these amendments as friendly. And I guess none of them went on, so I missed. And for all those reasons described in paragraph A of this act, she'll be titled the Tim O'Driscoll Fair and Transparent Elections Act of 2017. I don't know, Mr. Chair. None of the amendments went on, so I'm going to pull the amendment.
Oh.
Amendment, no, the amendment? Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer that amendment myself.
because Representative Nelson, I was going to ask Mr. Gehring if I could split the amendment. Representative Freiberg.
It can wait till we're done with discussion of this amendment.
Representative Fenton.
I would like to thank Representative Nelson for saving me the awkward moment of having to vote no against the chair. So,
since the amendment has been withdrawn and we do not have any other amendments, Representative Freiberg, is the your question on the matter before us on the bill, or is it something that's administrative afterwards?
I'll pass for now.
Okay. Well, members, that is all of the amendments that we have, and so what I'm going to ask Mr. Gehring to do is to review the what is now the House File 729 as amended, and I will just remind members that we took three amendments on here that were the West, the Pew, and the Pew amendments, and Mr. Gehring probably doesn't need to review those since we did adopt those. I'm going to ask him to walk through the bill, and then I'm going to ask if there's any public testimony, and we'll revert then to member discussion, and we should be able to be done by 12 o'clock or shortly thereafter, which would mean that we would not need an evening session on this. So with that, Mr. Gehring, if you want to give a brief overview as to what is in the bill. Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair,
So the H.O. 729, the one amendment as amended, includes the following provisions. I'll just try to go through really quickly rather than doing section-by-section walkthrough. So Article 1 is the election administration article. This contains the provisions of Representative O'Driscoll's original House File 729, which is actually Representative Fenton's, I understand. This is the Secretary of State's agency technical bill. And so that bill contains some provisions related to filling vacancies in school district board positions. There are some provisions related to canvassing in meeting rooms within the state capitol complex and some other technical sort of non-policy provisions. Those sections are included throughout Article 1. Also included in Article 1 is Representative West's bill related to electronic roster signatures, and that was amended by his amendment that was adopted during committee today. Representative Fenton's House File 463 is the alternative absentee voting procedure. This is Section 5 on page 4 of the DE1 amendment. We've already discussed this during the amendment process this morning. This language is Representative Fenton's bill with the A1 amendment that was adopted during the committee hearing on that bill. On Section 9 on page 6 of the DE1 is Representative Fisher's bill related to the use of I-voting stickers for absentee voting and mail balloting. Section 12 on page 7 of the bill. This is Representative O'Driscoll's bill related to local canvassing. This allows municipalities to canvass the results of their municipal primary elections on either the second or third day after the primary election is conducted. And, Mr. Chair, that's the entirety of Article 1. Then Article 2 is Representative Quam's bill related to uniform special election dates. I would note the modification that is in this article related to compared to the bill that Representative Quam presented. One is removal of the language that was in his original bill that provided for county oversight of school board elections. So that's all removed. So the only thing remaining in Article 2 is the uniform special election dates. As drafted in this amendment, the uniform special election dates would be the second Tuesday in February, second Tuesday in April, second Tuesday in May, second Tuesday in August, or the first Tuesday of the first Monday in November. So that conforms with the general election date, the state primary date, and then a modification to provide for a date in April and a date in February to avoid the March town election date. And that was a discussion item that was in a committee when Representative Quam's bill was being presented. Article 3, it's already been discussed. This is the June primary, so the date of the state primary and related local primaries would be shifted from the current August date until June. And then Article 4 is the county officers' language. There's a variety of provisions in there that have already been discussed, including the statewide authorization for all counties to choose to have their county recorder position be appointed. This is Representative O'Driscoll's bill. There's language from Representative Fenton's bill on filling county board vacancies, and then also individual provisions for specific counties, including House File 252, allowing for the appointment of the Benton County Recorder, House File 1516, allowing for the appointment of the Morrison County Recorder, House File 655, allowing for the appointment of the Pine County Auditor-Treasurer, House File 1271, the Stearns County Recorder, 1674 allows for the appointment of the Marshall County Recorder, and then finally, House File 1823 allows for the appointment of the Rice County Auditor Treasurer and the Recorder. Mr. Chair, that's the entirety of the DE1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Gehring. And as I said, we'll revert to testimony and input from the public at this time, and then we'll close with member discussion and a vote on the bill. We did have some individuals that wanted to testify, and I'll ask if they still would like to testify or come forward. Ms. Stacy Stout and Mr. Matt Hilgart, if you'd like to come forward, and then followed by Ms. Amber Baugi and Mr. Troy Olson. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent to proceed with your testimony.
I'm Stacy Stout with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Chair O'Driscoll and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to talk to you today in support of moving our state's primary election from August to June, as outlined in House File 729. The Minnesota Chamber represents over 2,300 businesses, that's over 500,000 employees, and our members support moving Minnesota's primary election to June. In August 2014, fewer than 13% of registered Minnesota voters went to the polls to vote in the primary election. That's a historic low for our high voter participation in the state. Holding a primary election when voters are largely tuned out from politics does not encourage the level of participation necessary for a truly representative process. Moving Minnesota's primary election to June would maximize the time that candidates have to take their case to the full electorate. It would provide candidates adequate time to campaign for the general election without the diversion of an intra-party challenge. Under the current mid-August primary system, intra-party primary races often stretch out longer than the general election, leaving little time for direct campaign between candidates who will ultimately be on the November ballot. It will level the playing field for candidates with primary challenges by providing them with time to refocus their campaign on the general election and catch up to candidates without primary challenges. A primary election that occurs when citizens are better engaged in the process and allows adequate time for the general election debate will improve the election process and, as a result, ensures the Minnesota legislature is representative of the entire population. We appreciate the work of this committee, and we hope that you will support House File 729. Thank you.
Ms. Stout, thank you. I do not see any member questions. Thank you for your time. Mr. Hilgard, followed by Ms. Vaughy, and then Mr. Olson. Mr. Hilgard, welcome again. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, my name is Matt Hilgart. I represent the Association of Minnesota Counties. The Association of Minnesota Counties represents all 87 Minnesota counties. I just wanted to first start by correcting myself earlier. I stated 44 counties had some system or combination of appointed draw officers. I did have a chance to look at the House Research Report, which was compiled in 2016. It's 44 counties that have received special legislations to either combine or appoint one of their three row officers. And then I looked at kind of the breakdown of what that is right now, and it's 35 counties with special legislation to appoint recorders, 6 with special authority to appoint auditors, 6 with special appointment to court treasurers, and then I believe 23 counties to appoint the combined office of auditor treasurer. So roughly about 35 recorders to about 29 auditor treasurer offices. So a little bit towards the recorder, but still pretty equal representation. I just wanted to remind this committee, and you've heard me speak on this issue before, about the hard work that AMC and the Minnesota Association of County Officers has put into this issue. It is emotional. We've seen it firsthand because we're dealing with the commissioners and the county row officers who've been talking about this, and many of whom are still elected officers. So it's a tough issue to talk about, and that's why we were very confident and supportive of the measures we brought forth the past 2 years to kind of lay out a very thorough process with public involvement on how to go about this change. I want to be clear that even if counties had this opportunity, we don't think we'd see a huge influx of people taking advantage of it right away. I think there are a lot of counties in rural Minnesota who have great kind of face time with their elected officers, and I don't think our county commissioners would be trying to take that. And with our legislation, you'd have to have an agreement with that office to make it actually appointed or a vacancy. That language that we both worked on last year was included in last year's omnibus bill in the House, and so we were very hopeful that it would have been included this year. I don't need to remind folks that if the legislation of all the special offices this year were to go through, every single member of this committee, I believe, would be represented by an appointed row officer of some sort. County governance is changing, and the legislature is demanding that we change, and so are our constituents. It's not uncommon for you to walk into your county offices these days, whether it be Pine or Stearns, and see taxpayer services instead of just one county recorder's, county auditor, county treasurer, and separate portions of the building, just one area where constituents can go for a one-stop shop. Our constituents are starting to demand that we be more efficient with our offices, and we're hearing that day to day. I mentioned earlier, I think in other testimony, or it was mentioned today by one of the representatives, that fiscal issues do matter, and we would completely agree. And for the offices of the auditor, that is a very important position that we want to make sure we have the best qualified candidate possible. And lastly, I just want to close by thanking both Chair O'Driscoll and Representative Fenton for always being open to conversations on this. This is a delicate issue. It's been around for a while, and I think we would definitely take you up on this if you think that more conversation is needed. We would be very interested in more conversation because we've put a lot of time and effort into our proposals. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hurd. I don't see any member questions, so thank you for your time. Mr. Olson. Welcome to the committee. I ask you to state your name, who you represent, and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Troy Olson, and I represent the Minnesota Association of County Officers, MACO. Just want to thank you for this opportunity and for the input that we've been allowed to provide in this bill, and specifically supporting extending the timeline for allowing in-person absentee voting, supporting uniform election dates, and for not mandating that counties administer school elections. That being said, I'd just like to sort of add on to what Mr. Hilgard said, in that MACO does oppose only statewide appointment of recorders and prefers the agreed-upon language that does include auditors and treasurers. And we understand the difficulties of that, but we just want to make sure that MACO is on the record for that. And then one other issue, when I testified earlier regarding Morrison County, it was unknown as to whether the elected incumbent wish to become appointed or remain elected, because she did not know that the bill was going to be introduced. Since then, I learned yesterday that she does wish to remain elected. So I would look forward to an opportunity to maybe discuss that further with the author as this bill moves forward, and perhaps take her out of this, or take Morrison County out of the bill, since she is elected. Does not plan to vacate the position and does not have a prior agreement with the board.
Mr. Olson, to that point, we did hear some things as well in my office that Morrison County might be wanting to do something differently. No amendment came forward, and so without having firsthand knowledge, I was not going to offer an amendment. The bill author is the person who I would defer to from that district to offer that amendment, but since there was nothing that was asked today in committee, there is obviously the opportunity on the floor, if that is the wishes of the bill author and the county, to take care of a correction amendment at that point.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And since I got that information so late, I didn't want to upset the apple cart, so to speak.
Thank you, Mr.
Patience.
Olson. Seeing no member questions, thank you. And Ms. Bogey, if I'm pronouncing your name correctly, and I do apologize if that is who you are and you weren't sure if I was calling on you. But we do want to hear from you regardless.
Thank
so sorry.
You. I've heard worse. It's Amber Bouger, and I'm the chair of the Minnesota County Recorders Association Legislative
Welcome.
Committee. Thank you. I really don't have anything further to add from what Mr. Olson said. I believe he appropriately explained the viewpoint of MACO and MCRA. Thank you.
Thank you. And to the point of recorders, and we had talked about this in committee with the role officers, many more people in the legislature are seeing that the job of the county recorder and some efficiencies and savings and different things that could result, and that the job of the county recorder is an extremely important position, but traditionally been elected, that maybe the time has come, as Representative Nelson has suggested. I'm just seeing a lot more support for not the full package at this time, but for recorders. That doesn't mean that other things can't follow, but I just don't know if there's enough legislative support to be able to make that happen. We're not picking and trying to single out. We're trying to do what we think is best policy with what we can go at the time. So I wanted you to hear that from me as the bill author.
Thank you. And I am actually the chief deputy recorder for Hennepin County, so I don't have any experience with being elected or appointed. However, I do know that our Recorders Association feels very strongly about this and would appreciate having the language that was agreed upon with AMC included. Thank you.
I understand. We're halfway across the river, and nobody's happy. Welcome to St. Paul. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that wishes to testify? Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm Keith Carlson, Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association that consists of 10 of the greater Minnesota regional center counties and 4 counties here in the metropolitan area. I also want to thank Representative Fenton, the chair, and the committee for producing us what's really, in my opinion, an excellent bill, particularly extending the in-person absentee voting will be a time-saving, workload-saving measure for those counties that elect to take advantage of that. Particularly want to highlight Article 4 on behalf of our member counties of Stearns, Benton, and I'm missing one other.
Morrison.
Not Morrison, but well, one of the other counties is. I'm blanking on it. Well, all of the provisions we certainly support. I do want to again reinforce what the previous testifiers have suggested, that we support the appointment statewide for both recorders and the other county offices, and are hopeful at some future date. Particularly with regards to the auditor treasurer's functions, these are getting it to be extremely complicated functions. These offices administer the property tax system. That, as you all know, is done by very complicated computer systems. They administer our elections. And in those counties that elect to provide it, also do the deputy registrar function, as well as a number of other duties. Somebody simply can't walk in and take over these duties. It does need to revert to the appointment process that's proposed here. With that, I'll conclude. Be happy to answer any questions.
Having seen no member questions, Mr. Carlson, thank you. Come on down. Good morning and welcome. Do you have some additional things to add to the discussion today that we maybe haven't heard?
Just briefly, my name is Sarah Folsom. I'm from Rice County, the other Mica County. And on behalf of the county, we just want to thank you for including our local bill in with this amendment. And just to reassure that this was driven from our local elected officials, and we had unanimous support from our county board in going forward. And we do have draft employment agreements in place from those that would remain in place. So again, thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you for your time, and James will have you sign in if you haven't done it for the official record for testifying today. Thank you. Sir, good morning and welcome.
Morning. My name is Fran Winchell. I'm the Rice County Auditor Treasurer. I'd like to speak in behalf of the bill, supporting the bill. My office is affected. I am retiring after this term, so I certainly have I manage a lot of money on behalf of the county, and there needs to be a certain skill set, I think, involved in the person that takes over this position after I leave. So. Thank you very much for your time, and I would appreciate all your support on this bill.
Thank you for your testimony today, sir. Is there anyone else that wishes to speak on the matter before the committee House File 729 as amended? Member discussion. Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And first off, I'd like to ask for a roll call.
Roll call being requested.
And, Mr. Chair, I agree with the testifiers that there's a lot of good things in this bill. Moving it forward, there's a lot of good things that can be that are going to help simplify and make our streamline our election processes. But I unfortunately have to vote no on this bill because of the June primary. As was discussed, I don't believe that's the direction we need to go as a state. And unfortunately, I'll vote no because even though I like a lot of other parts of this bill.
Other member discussion at this time. Representative Fenton, we are to that point where we have taken the amendments and we have taken public testimony, we've taken member testimony, and it's your opportunity to share the final words before we move to the vote on House File 729 as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and thank you for your time today. I'm glad we're going to get this done before noon. So in the honor of brevity, I just urge a yes vote.
Motion that House File 729 as amended be re-referred to the General Register. A roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll on the bill.
O'Driscoll?
Yes.
Pugh?
Aye.
Bliss?
Yes.
Fenton?
Yes.
Freiberg?
No.
Halverson?
No.
Jessup?
Yes.
Lee?
No.
Mason?
No.
Nash?
Yep.
Nelson?
No.
Peterson?
Yes.
Quam?
Yes.
Samstead?
No.
Swadzinski?
Yeah.
Tice?
Yes.
West?
Yes.
Ewa Joachim?
Mm-hmm. On House File 729 as amended, there being 11 ayes and 7 nays, the motion does prevail, and the bill is referred to the General Register. Members, before we go, I want to thank you for your hard work the last couple of weeks in getting the business of the people of the state of Minnesota done. When you start in government operations, you go, how come this committee never meets the first 2 or 3 weeks? And I keep telling people, the averages will work out compared to some of the other committees. And with that, I have one other item. I don't think we're going to need to meet this evening because you've taken care of our work, and that is unless Mr. Gelman has brought pie in anticipation of an evening session. If not, we are adjourned. Thank you, members.